This is Floor Radio, and I'm Dave Foster. This is the third part of a four-part series on Floor Radio where we're looking at the future. My guest is a futurist. His name is Andy Hines. He's the director of consulting at Social Technologies. That's an international research firm. You know, when I think of the future and really companies delving into the future, I think of a program I saw several years ago about Xerox. And they were, I guess, concerned when they saw the development of computer technology, and they obviously, being in the paper business, decided that maybe they ought to look into this. They hired a bunch of experts and put them off in a world by themselves, and they developed all of the things that we use today, the mouse, the Windows technology, laser printing, and a bunch of other things I can't think of. And then they said, nah, I guess we're going down the wrong road here, and all of the people that they used came out and have since become billionaires developing all this stuff. Do you see a lot of companies doing something like that, spending a lot of money to see the future and then don't pay any attention to it?
Well, there's the conundrum of being, you know, of being, should we be first or second, right? And there are some instances where being first is the right thing to do, and, you know, you can kind of capture a market space and, you know, like Microsoft did with the operating system. I mean, they just staked out that territory. Google's another example. They've staked out the search engine. But you could actually argue that Google was second, really. I mean, Yahoo was really probably the first one to kind of lay claim to that space. So it's one of those difficult things of knowing, is this a place where we want to be ahead of the marketplace and, you know, kind of put our stake there and establish it, or is this a case where it's kind of better to wait and see and kind of be second? And I wish I had the magic formula for that. I think it depends on, you know, kind of specific circumstances. But there are lots of examples of companies that have been first, but they've just been too far ahead of their time.
I see.
You know what typically, the typical reason, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, is, you know, falling in love with the technology and not paying enough attention to people's responses to it.
I see. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. And I guess that probably happens a good deal. I guess companies, we get so occupied in the technology, we really don't see where it fits out in the world.
Yeah, and there's a whole body of work now around disruptive innovation that Clay Christensen up at Harvard has been working on that points out that it's often a very simple, clunky, almost not that good technology that performs a very simple function very well and cheaply that is successful in the marketplace. You know, it does what it needs to do, and that's all, and it's not very elegant, but that's what the market wants. And so organizations are having to pay attention to that. It's not just having the latest, greatest, brightest, fastest. Sometimes it's just having something that fits what people need to do.
At the time, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Now, do you have what's your vision of the future? I mean, in a bunch of areas, transportation, education. You see, 25 years down the road, that we'll be doing things in those two areas a great deal differently than we're doing them today.
Well, I would say I hope so. I would put myself in the optimistic camp if you had to sort our futures into schools of thought. I generally am optimistic. I think when you look ahead a generation, I think some good news is we've got our population largely under control. I think our big concern, and this is shared by everybody, is will we get our environmental house in order? And that kind of relates to both transportation and education, but probably more directly to transportation. When you look a generation ahead, that's an area where we may see some really big changes. We're starting to see now, you know, certainly the hybrid electric vehicles are, we would call them a transition step. And I guess the big open question is, you know, given the high price of energy, given continued progress in alternatives, will those two come together and create a perfect storm that enables really a whole new transportation approach in another generation? But I would sort of caution, I would give my take my own advice and say not to get carried away with the capabilities. I mean, we could certainly do it if we had the sort of political and social will. So I guess, you know, it's kind of a combination of, you know, what will the environment, economics, and sort of political and social factors, how will they come together?
Yeah.
And you can imagine a scenario where, you know, we're running around in fuel cell vehicles in a high conservation kind of scenario. And you could imagine something that's not too different from today with, you know, more hybrid electric, but really still being in a transition state.
We're going to pause here for a brief message. I have Evan Hackel, president of Carpet One Floor and Home, on the line with us. Evan, let me ask you a question. Why does Carpet One Floor and Home have proprietary brands like Bigelow, Lees, and Liz Claiborne?
Dave, excellent question. There are really two reasons. The first and the most important reason is all of our research shows that customers in the floor covering industry are looking for real brands, brands that they can understand. And this industry is an industry where, frankly, there are not a lot of brands that customers understand. By providing customers with brands that they recognize and they know and that have heritage, like Bigelow is the oldest brand in America, customers have a greater degree of confidence and much more willing to buy in our store. The second reason is when we sell proprietary brands like we have, that are brands that we really create a story around that have added value to the customer is not comparing us on price, they're comparing us on value. That's where we want to be. We want to be compared on value. We don't want to have the same brands that the home centers have. We don't want to have the same brands that other people have. Because when you do that, you're selling a commodity. When you're selling commodity, you're selling only on price. We want to sell value. That's how our members make significantly higher margins and significantly higher profits than the rest of the industry.
If you'd like to learn more about Carpet One Floor and Home, contact Bill Hosner at 886-315-8705. It seems to me every time I see a traffic report on television and see traffic backed up as far as you can see, that's an idea that really isn't going to last another 25 years. It wouldn't seem like it would be a good way to go forward. And I suppose with the changes we're seeing in, you mentioned energy and certainly technology, that I guess we don't need to go to a central office all the time. It would seem like there'd be some major changes in that area.
Absolutely, and I'm speaking to you from a home office, and we're a 35-person firm, and there's only about a dozen people that go to the office every day. We're spread all over the country and the world, and I think that's kind of the norm now. Where the real breakthrough in transportation might come is from really a much heavier and smarter use of information and communication technology. And, you know, you can, I think we'll be capable in that longer-term future of, you know, very easily and readily deciding or being able to gather information before we make a trip about, you know, where's the best place, where's the best route, and, you know, how long is it going to take. And, you know, we see some of that future already here, but we really haven't pulled it together comprehensively. But I think we'll travel a lot smarter in the future. At least I hope so.
And perhaps a lot less.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when we did our initial, I remember doing our initial studies of telecommuting, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and, you know, the supposition was, well, this is going to drastically reduce the amount of time we spend in vehicles, but actually it turned out to lead to a slight increase. And it changed the nature of the trips. Instead of, you know, going from, you know, suburb to central city or, you know, home to office, what we were doing is making lots more sort of local trips. So, you know, while I'm here working at home, I might shoot out and do an errand during the day. Visit a friend. And so it's kind of paradoxical that it changes the patterns, but it doesn't necessarily reduce the amount of time we drive and travel.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I noticed on your site that you had worked with a fast food company identifying forces, I guess outside forces that might affect their business. That has to be an interesting field. What's your vision of fast food and the, you know, the food service sector years down the road?
Well, yeah, there's just the challenge for anything that has fast as part of its, you know, the description of its industry is how do we get faster? And I think there's some interesting possibilities in terms of, you know, how do you maybe rethink the interaction in a way that that provides new. So instead of, you know, drive-throughs is kind of the fast way to do things now, but are there, I don't know, are there traveling? You could almost imagine something like a bookmobile for fast food, or kiosks, or, you know, fast food on wheels, or whatever it might be. But there's always a sort of a new frontier that redefines what does fast and convenient mean. I think the good news is those companies that are, you know, thinking to the future are kind of wrestling with that now.
I see. Well, that makes sense. And I can remember back in the late 90s, we saw supermarkets that delivered, and that sort of, they popped up overnight and I guess quickly disappeared, at least in most places that I've seen. Right. That seems like a great idea whose time may come again, do you think?
Yeah, you know, we saw a lot of, like, with the kind of the dot-com explosion, we saw a bunch of services and, you know, they couldn't quite figure out the business model. But what typically happens in those kind of boom periods is, you know, we get a little over-exuberant and maybe, you know, stretch beyond where society's ready to go. But in that, we'll, you know, learn a lot of important lessons, and I think that kind of delivery service will come back in perhaps a different form and a slightly more sophisticated form. But I think the important lessons will be learned and applied. It's interesting how many times, you know, a technology will kind of be hyped and then fizzle out, and people expect that it's, you know, gone forever. But really, it's almost like a let's huddle back and learn, you know, learn where we went wrong, and let's come back again when conditions are favorable.
Well, it really makes sense, and maybe we can plan on that.
I hope so. I mean, personally, I would, if I never had to step in a grocery store again, I'd be a happy person.
Well, and we were talking about people taking side trips. I remember, I have to imagine a lot of those are to supermarkets, and at least that would trim one side trip.
Yeah, and it's again, you're back to the sort of the systems map of, you know, people's daily routines. And if, you know, if we subtract some time over here, do we add it over there? And that's one of the things you'd be looking at, is kind of understanding the system's impacts of one choice and how it affects the rest.
This will conclude the third part of a four-part series where we're looking at the future on Floor Radio. My guest is Andy Hines. He's a futurist. He's the director of consulting at Social Technologies. That's an international research firm. We'll add the fourth and final part of this series tomorrow. And you're listening to Floor Radio.